quote the legendary Alvin DeLauro. You're on. He hits me with that every time I start the hour off. Dude, you're on. Yeah, I know, Alvin. That's what the red light would suggest. The giant red light that says on air. Dude, you're on. Well, thanks, Alvin. You are, too. Program brought to you by Rockin' Mortgage. Alvin DeLauro is the best that there ever was at doing what he does. Namely, saying, you're on. Thanks, Alvin. It's brought to you by Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rockin' Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Hawkside, dude, good. How'd that taste, Alvin? Glad he got off my ass for once.
Thank you!
Hey, Rome, look at this email. Listening to Bills fans being so proud and full of themselves early in the season is so good. I hope to God the Bills win this weekend against the Pats. That way, the so-called up-and-coming city of Buffalo burns, and burns slowly. Then they can finally move that franchise out of that crap hole city and move it to Toronto, or even a city in better condition than Buffalo, like Niagara Falls, Matt in Poland Springs. I'll say it again. The NFL is better when the Bills are undefeated. The world overall is better when the Bills are undefeated. The Bills beat the Patriots. The league will be better. And I'm not here to hate the Patriots. I'm here to hype the Bills. The Bills at 4-0 would be amazing if they beat the Patriots. It just would be. Now, they might get slapped. They might get hammered. And then they're 3-1, and they're still in the hunt. In other words, Bills Mafia, you got a lot to be very optimistic about. Now, we've seen this before. We've seen them get out quickly. We've seen you get all hyped and excited, only to see it end so badly. But maybe with that defense this year, maybe it's different. Maybe with Frank Gore pounding that rock, maybe it's different. Maybe with Josh Allen showing improvements in his decision-making and showing some touch throwing the ball, maybe it's different. Hey, Rome, that guy stirring Gatorade with cups was not weird. Signed a famous comedian who made a movie about properly hydrating football players.
You can do it!
Stephen PHX. And at Nick Sticks tweets, Jim, I wish my billionaire dad would have left me $30 for a haircut so I didn't have to use a salad bowl. Signed Mark Davis. That's his calling card, man. That's his thing, that haircut. Well, that and where he eats and his flip phone and the fact that he pursued John Gruden relentlessly and finally convinced him to take $10 million a year to do what he's done and his haircut. Bryce in CA tweets, Rome, Hawk, you are the biggest idiot dope producer and contribute absolutely nothing to this program. Hawk, okay, thank you. Rome, you bet.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Look, I've said things like, Adam, don't be a dope. But I've never said that he was the biggest dope producer and contributes absolutely nothing to the program. I've never gone that far. But if I did, he would thank me, and I would chase it with, you bet.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
You bet. Anytime. I'm here for you. If you need anything else, you know where to find me. All right, so let's talk MMA for a minute. Blade, the Mighty Ducks, Terminator, Die Hard, Bourne, Austin Powers. So if I mention all those movies, what do they have in common? Great trilogies. The best trilogies. And save that Lord of the Rings and Star Wars crap for a nerd who cares. Don't even come in here with The Godfather. Because the third one damn near nuked the cred of the first two. But if you're looking to add to that list that I ran down of the great trilogies, go ahead and add this one. Stipe v. DC, the third. Because Daniel Cormier apparently is back. Credit to the friend of this program and current golden ticket holder, Ariel Helwani, for getting the scoop on his ESPN show yesterday.
I'm going to fight this guy again, and my intention is to fight him in the right way.
Hopefully that's enough to get my hand raised. You know, win or lose, I'm not fighting again. This will be the only time that I ever step foot in the octagon again.
So the next one is officially the last one.
Next one will be the last one. It has to be Stipe. No one else matters.
And is that offer on the table right now from the UFC? Do they want to make that fight?
Yes, they want to make that fight. They want me to fight Stipe again. Yeah, it was a fantastic fight. It was a fantastic fight for all the wrong reasons. It didn't have to be a fantastic fight, but it was. And I'm not saying I can just go grab Stipe Miocic and throw him down at will, you know, but I can do a lot of things better. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go whenever. The sooner the better for me.
I know they're looking for a main event on December 14th. Is that too soon, or would you be down to do that as well?
I'd be down to do it.
That's vintage DC. That was such a great response. What a great exchange that was. He goes, that was such a great fight, and it didn't need to be. It shouldn't have been. And he's right. So I think I speak for Dana White, UFC fans, fight fans, sports fans. Hell yes. I mean, that's potentially really big news. No one, not even DC, knew what DC was going to do when he sat on the canvas after getting knocked out in that rematch fight that he was winning handily against Stipe last month. Remember, going into that fight, retirement was very much on the table. He said as much to me on this program. DC came in the jungle, and a few days before he put that heavyweight strap on the line, he said that might be his last fight. So last month could have very well been the last time we saw one of the best to ever do it. And his brilliant career would have ended with a bleep ton of regret, at least the way the last fight ended. Now, don't get this twisted. I'm not taking anything away from Stipe. Dude's a badass. He won that fight. He earned that fight. He deserved to win that fight. But DC did admit to ignoring his coaches. DC admitted he fell in love with standing in front of Stipe and turning his face into hamburger meat. He liked the way that felt. He was scoring at will. He liked it. And remember, DC, he can strike now. He can strike. I'm not saying he can't. He was turning Stipe's face into hamburger meat. He can strike. But he is a world-class wrestler. And he admitted on that night, he strayed away from the strategy, he did not listen to his coaches, and he fell in love with his striking, something that he can do at a high level. And he had that plan working flawlessly in round one, so much so that it looked like it was going to be a short night. So maybe he thought to himself, this is it. I got this dude. I beat him before, I'm beating him again. Not only am I beating him again, I'm beating him up now. And look at his face. It looks like hamburger meat. I like the way that feels. And it's my last fight. So let me get in some shots before I get my belt on and I retire as the baddest dude on the planet and I send a message in the process. And then that plan, and the coaches knew it, I think, that plan went to hell because Stipe adjusted like any other great fighter. And he went to work on DC's body and he had success. And he went down there, and he dug to the body, and then he went upstairs, and then he finished it. And it was pretty shocking. DC called it the lowest IQ fight he's ever fought. So again, taking nothing away from Stipe. He earned that. He deserved that. But Cormier and everybody close to him believed that he did as much to beat himself as Stipe did. Credit to Stipe for taking advantage, making the adjustments, and executing and finishing. But there's no doubt that DC did not fight his best fight, at least tactically. So instead of walking away knowing that he could have won that fight in August and walking off on that, now he wants to run it back. And not only run it back, but run it back quickly. Because if he could have won in August, he's probably thinking to himself, I know I can win in December if I fight my fight. What's going to change in 4 months? So who knows? Who knows if he gets that 245 date in Vegas on December 14th? But he said he's willing to do it. He's ready. And right now there is a headliner vacancy on that card. You know, I've said this a million times. Daniel Cormier's got nothing to prove. Nothing to prove. If he walked off right now, even on that loss, he's a Hall of Famer. A top five, pound for pound, maybe, of all time. Definitely, pound for pound, the best human being ever to step in the cage. But he's got something left in the tank, something he wants to prove. He wants to empty the tank. And better to do that or try to do that than walking around for the rest of his life wondering what might have been or what could have been or what should have been. So what you have now are a couple of guys who believe they can win because they both have beaten each other before. And now we've got a trilogy fight to settle the score once and for all with a headlining vacancy available. And maybe to settle once and for all the argument about who's the greatest heavyweight of all time. One last time. So hopefully this goes down. If it's set, we'll get into it. But all of a sudden we have a look at something that might be pretty cool. And by the sounds of it, that might happen, and it might happen a lot sooner than later. And again, the beauty of Dana White and his company, the best fights do get made. Boxing comes up short time and time again in that regard. But Dana can say, you fight you. You fight him. And he makes the best fights happen. The fights the fans want. And I don't think anybody who likes that sport does want to see that again. And the best part is, if you see that again, I guarantee you'll get a focused and tactical Daniel Cormier. And taking nothing away from Stipe, run it back. Let's see. Then he'll get the very best version. But again, Stipe made his adjustments brilliantly and still had to finish a really good fighter, even if DC did not fight a really good fight, although he was in the beginning. Let's see it. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to Salt Lake City quickly before I take a break. Spencer in Salt Lake. Good to have you, Spencer. How are you?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for the time, buddy. Hey, I had the privilege of taking the first swing through the jungle about a week or so ago, and I was definitely nervous and started feeling the heat, but I was able to avoid the flame out, dismount, and stick the landing. And a bunch of my Salt Lake City friends hit me up and were picking me up for rep in Salt Lake City. So who knows, maybe we can turn No Take Lake back into Weak Take Lake and one day even Mediocre Take Lake. But speaking of my first call, I mentioned getting some karma for the Redskins, and I missed a few days of the show, but I'm guessing that didn't happen. Just a hunch with what the terribly typical laydown last night. And I would say I'm surprised and angry, but you pretty much nailed it, dude. It is just another day at the office for these guys. So, you know, the team takes on the persona of the coach. Basically, their persona is that of a two-day-old wet smash birthday cake that sat in the garbage can upside down on a wet plate of mixed coffee grounds. I mean, they're just so soft. It's they've just quit. It's ridiculous. Side note, Jay, those glasses that you started wearing, they're not going to make you look smarter or save your job. And, you know, their defensive coordinator, Greg McCloskey, thinks a blitz is basically an everyman's beer from Milwaukee. It's just a mess, dude. The stadium is just filled with the opposing fans, and there's just more penalties than a freaking stop-and-go herky-jerky call from Flamian. And, you know, announcers are talking about bright spots for the future before halftime. It's such a mess. I would say that, you know, I wish I knew how this team could catch a break. But I do know, because basically the owner and the GM are like classic 80s movie villains. I mean, they charge people to pick up tickets at will call. They get busted for selling expired beer from the World Cup.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Now, Spencer, if it were up to me, I would not have hammered you the way Alvin did. I think Alvin is projecting. I think Alvin did not appreciate the way I started off the hour by saying, you're on, dude. Because I would have just kind of given you the Jaws music, because you were like, you were exactly what you said. You were Mediocre Take Lake. You weren't Weak Take Lake. You were Mediocre Take Lake. You weren't good enough to rack. You really weren't bad enough to run. I kind of did respect your PG-13 version of Smack. I would have run with the Jaws music and said something to the effect of, Spencer, get out of the water. Spencer, shark, shark, shark. Get to the land, Spencer. There's a shark in the water. You know, like you're at one of the award shows, you're running out of time and the music comes up. Here comes the shark. Because you were okay. You're all right with your upside down cake smooshed up in the trash can with the coffee grounds because they're so soft and they quit. The thing is, they didn't really quit. Like, that did not reflect well in Chicago last night that they couldn't put them away. They couldn't finish. The thing is, your team didn't quit. It just sucks. And the organization is garbage top to bottom. And this happens every time you show up on a Monday night. But if it were up to me, and it's not, it was up to Alvin, I would hit you with some Jaws music. Keep trying. When we come back, Johnny Davis, Ray's outfielder, joins us. Hey, fellas, how many of you use your wife or your girlfriend's shampoo in the shower? Come on, man. Be honest. How many of you? More than a few, I guarantee it. Have you considered, though, the importance of using a product designed for your own hair? You know, men's hair? After all, your hair is different. Dove Men Plus Care has created a hair care range designed to fortify men's hair, to give it the care it needs to stay strong and to stay healthy. So do your family and your hair a favor. Get your own products. Dove Men Plus Care. For stronger, more resilient hair, it is available at Walmart.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, as promised, we are joined right now by an outfielder for the Tampa Bay Rays with an amazing story. He scored 4 runs in 5 career MLB games. He made his major league debut earlier this month. He was selected in the 22nd round of the 2013 draft out of West Los Angeles College. Tampa Bay is currently in the second wild card spot. They're at home against the Yankees this evening at 7:10 p.m. Eastern. Outfielder Johnny Davis is my guest. Johnny, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. You?
Good, good. Listen, you've got an amazing story, as I mentioned, and it's something I want to get into in a moment because I think people would be really moved and inspired by it. But before I get there, given everything you've been through, what's it like to be in the majors and come into the ballpark every night with a team that's battling for a postseason spot in late September?
Oh, man, it's a dream come true. It's nothing like it. Just come here and prepare, get ready to go out there and fight for a playoff spot.
All right, so when we talk about your story, if we were to go all the way back, you grew up in Compton. What was life like for you growing up?
I don't know, different, I guess. Especially speaking to other baseball players, you realize how different it is, life that I went through as a young age and things I've seen that I shouldn't have seen and just day-to-day stuff that I went through.
Johnny Davis, my guest, you know, without belaboring it, the fact is you and your mom and your two brothers lived in and out of homeless shelters, and there were times when there just was not even enough to eat. As you said, quote, if we were lucky, we got ramen noodles. It was cheap. You could get 10 packs for a dollar, end quote. I mean, it sounds like a really, really terrible thing in a really challenging time. What was that period of your life like?
It was tough, man, growing up like that because, like I mentioned to another guy that interviewed me and told him, like, when you're that young, you don't really, like, even when you're poor, you don't really know how poor you are because you're just a kid having fun. But we were at a stage where I was young and I knew, like, I knew it wasn't all good. I knew I didn't know where the next meal was coming from and things like that. Going in and out of shelters, I knew that wasn't, like, normal for normal kids.
Talking to Johnny Davis, not at all, right? And then you start to play baseball, but even your start in baseball was not normal either. Like, the story goes, you were playing baseball one summer as a punishment, and he said, Mom, please don't make me play baseball. I'll be good, I promise. So what did you think of baseball when you first started playing?
I don't know, man. I just didn't like it. I wasn't really in it. Like, when I was that young, I wasn't really into sports at all, really. I was into playing outside with my friends, but I wasn't really into. I didn't like baseball. I don't know. It was different, especially because when you're younger, not that many kids are good, so not that many kids can hit the ball to the outfield and just things like that. So it was kind of boring for me. And then so I never played. I told my mom I'd be good and didn't want to go back to the park and play baseball no more. And didn't play anymore. Excuse me. Didn't play anymore until I got in college. And the rest of history.
Yeah, I want to get to that. I mean, what you just said is amazing, right? Like, I don't like playing baseball. Don't make me play baseball. And you didn't play again until you got to college. But in the interim, a local legend saw you playing, Gerald Pickens. For those who don't know, who is Gerald Pickens and what does he mean to you?
Gerald Pickens, he's a coach. He's a coach that got a lot of people drafted out of Compton, man. A lot of people played under G. Coach G, and man, he's inspiration in my life. He, like, even when I wasn't playing baseball, He was my mentor and helped me out with things. Man, he done bought me meals. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, G was big time in my life and big time in a lot of other kids' lives from Compton. And he was trying to convince me to play baseball that whole time. I should have listened to him earlier.
Ray's outfielder Johnny Davis joining us. So also the story goes, your younger brother Tyree was playing, and one day you took him to a workout in front of scouts. They were blown away by his speed, but he said, man, that's nothing. You should see my brother. Legend has it that you ran a 60-yard dash that day in 5.9 in jeans, 5.9 seconds. What do you remember about that? Is that how that went?
It's kind of how it went, but everybody keeps saying 5.9. It was 6.0. They're giving me that extra little millisecond, but it was 6.0. But, yeah, my little brother, they asked him about his brother, and he was like, yeah, I got a brother that's faster than me, and they couldn't believe it. And then they asked me to run, and I ran, and ran 6.0.
You run 6.0, but like as you point out, like you transferred to high school in Lawndale. You didn't play organized baseball, though, until you went to West Los Angeles College, and then you tear it up. You hit .336. You had 22 stolen bases. I mean, and dude, is that true? Did you just literally show up in college and start playing baseball? How do you explain having that kind of success without even having played until you got to that level?
I'm a competitor, man. Like, I'm a fast learner. And most of the things that I know how to do now today, I taught myself. So, like, I taught myself how to do a lot of different things. I taught myself how to play the drums. I taught myself how to ride dirt bikes, motorcycles, and all types of things. So when I looked at baseball, I just looked at it as a challenge that I can teach myself how to do it. And I showed up, and the coach saw that I was an athlete, told me. He was like, you're in there starting day one. And he threw me out there, kept running me out there, and I ended up doing well.
Dude, like, so when you taught yourself how to play the drums, did you have musical influences? Like, did you throw on the cans and were you listening to people to teach yourself how to play drums? Did you have influences?
I was in church. I grew up in a church, and it was my our rule at church was you either sing in the choir or you learn how to play an instrument. I taught myself how to play the drums.
Johnny Davis is joining us. That's incredible. So the Brewers draft you. After that season in college, at that point, what were you thinking about your baseball future?
I was thinking just to make it to the big leagues as quickly as I can. That's why I even played in college, because scout told me not to play in college. He was like, we'll just draft you. And I was like, I want to learn. I want to learn how to play first. I don't want to just show up to pro ball with no experience and be learning on the fly. So I learned a little bit in college, and throughout the minors, I learned every day. I was picking everybody's brain that I could, learning as much as I could.
But it's pretty amazing that somebody like that told you that and said, this is the way to get there. And you said, no, I'm not in that kind of hurry. I want to learn. I want to be ready when I do get there. And then in your first full season in the minors, you steal 32 more bases, but you blew out your ACL. So at that point, what was it like to put in all that work, get drafted, be on your way, but then suffer an injury like that so early in your career?
Man, it was a blessing and a curse. Like it was like a blessing in disguise, because I got hurt and I was like sitting there moping around, pissed, because I know I'm older and haven't played that much baseball and I need the reps. But I sat back and learned a lot throughout my rehab process. That whole year, I just sat back and learned the game. I studied it big time, and I've been night and day the baseball player that I am now that I was before the injury. I'm a totally different player, and I'm way better.
Johnny Davis joining us. I'm blown away by the story because there's so many twists and turns in this. Like, then, you're better, right? You learn about yourself and about the game, and you come back. And then again, you're tearing it up on the base pass. You're a nightmare there. But by the time we get to the start of even last season, you requested your release from the Brewers. Why was that, and what was your plan at that point?
Well, it wasn't no room for me. I wasn't playing with the Brewers, and I needed to play, and they knew I needed to play. They had made some moves. They had got some guys, and it was a trickle effect. Some guys that came down from the big leagues and was taking up spots in AAA, that spots that I deserved to play in. But it wasn't much room, and it's business. So we went to Mexico to keep playing because I needed to play, and I got out there and played every day. they had a spot for me to play every day, and I went there and showed out.
Like, it seems to me, two things talking to you seem pretty clear to me. Number one, you're your own man. You're going to make your own decisions. And number two, you just want to play. You just want to play and you want to get better. But Pickens did tell USA Today he thought it was a mistake at the time for you to go to Mexico. Your agent apparently did not love that move either. What made you feel like that was the right place for you?
I don't know, man. I just feel like my speed's undeniable. Like, if somebody's going to hear that it's a fast guy in Mexico tearing it up. That's how I look at it, because it ain't too many people that can run like me in the game of baseball. So I felt like it didn't matter where I played, as long as I played, somebody will see.
Well, that's what happened, right? You go there, you hit 300, and you steal 54 more bases. And then late August, the Rays were looking for another outfielder, especially one that could run. And after they scouted you, they signed you, they brought you into their minor league system. What was it like for you when that happened, and how'd you approach those games?
Like they told me, you're going to come here, we're going to evaluate you. We're going to evaluate you on stealing bags. We want you to steal some bases, and you're going to get in there. They're going to put me in as, base stealing situations. And the manager's like, everybody's going to know you're stealing. I'm telling the other manager, like, telling the catcher, everybody's going to know, and you got to steal a bag. And that's what we did, and I stole the bases, and now I'm here.
All right, so a couple of thoughts before I let you go, because it is a great story. The story goes also, you're in your hotel room playing Call of Duty. What happened after that? What happened next?
I got a phone call from Brady, AAA manager, and I get off the phone real quick, and I tell my homeboys, like, hold on, because they're in the microphone. I'm talking to them through the game, and I tell them, hold on, like, but I tell them, like, panicking, like, really fast, like, hold on, and I can hear them talking through the game, and they're talking while I'm on the phone with Brady, and they're like, hey, I think Johnny's getting called up, like, they freaking out because of the way I got off the phone. And, Brady eventually told me, and after he told me that I was getting called up, I got back on the microphone and told my homeboys, and they were all happy for me, screaming, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs in the hotel room, then called a bunch of, texts and called a bunch of people back home. It was a great night.
A great night, maybe only better 13 days later. You make your debut against the Rangers, you're a pinch runner, and then on September 13th, you're playing the Angels in Anaheim. You get your first plate appearance as a big leaguer. You hit a triple in the first at bat. After the game, your teammates put you in a laundry cart and showered you with beer, soap, aftershave, and more. What was that whole night like?
Bro, it was unreal, man. That night was special. I'll never forget that night, especially when after leaving the field and going back home and seeing all my friends at the house and chilling and just happy for me and celebrating my success. It was a special night. And the beer shower was awesome. My teammates, they were happier than I was. Like, it was just a great feeling.
Hey, Johnny, last thought. A few days after that, you're playing at Dodger Stadium, all right? And again, remember, you didn't really like baseball growing up. You're from Compton. You've been through all these things. Dodger Stadium is Dodger Stadium, man. Chavez Ravine, there's nothing like it. What was it like to be in front of your family and Gerald Pickens and to play at that yard? In fact, the last couple of weeks, what have they been like? Is there any way to put in words what it's been?
There's really no way to put in words, man. I couldn't believe it. Like, I couldn't believe that I was at Dodger Stadium, like, about to play. Like, that blew my mind, like, especially because, like, I've went to Dodger games and seen, like, people playing, and I'm like, dude, I'm going to be one of those people that other people are looking at down here on this field. It was pretty magical. Like, it was, especially to do it I'm the hometown kid. Like, everybody came out to watch me, family, friends, G, my mom, my dad, like, fiance, my son. My son got to see me on Dodger Stadium. Like, I'll never forget that. And he won't never forget it. So Yeah, it was pretty dope.
And that is pretty dope. This is why I started the interview by saying this is an amazing story. Johnny Davis is my guest. Dude, I appreciate that so much. I appreciate that you took the time to lay that out because that is an amazing journey, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who hear that and get a lot from that and see a lot of inspiration in that. The race, and on top of all that, I mean, just if you had got to the major leagues, that'd be one thing, but you're right there in the hunt. They're in the second wild card spot, and they're at it again tonight. Johnny, I appreciate you. Thanks for sharing your story. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. That's good stuff. Mom, don't make me play baseball. I'll be good. She made him play as punishment, and he didn't want to play. That is so incredible. Like, he taught himself to play baseball. Like, he taught himself to play the drums. Like, he taught himself to ride dirt bikes. Like, he just teaches himself stuff. And then, against the wishes of people that had his best interest, he said, I'm going to go play in Mexico. You don't want to do that. People will not see you there. People will not know. And his thought was, yeah, really? If I keep stealing 50-plus bags a year and I run the way I run, somebody will find me. And they did. Johnny Davis, Rays outfielder. All right, we'll take a short time out. One last segment coming up next. You want to think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. That ran long, but that was an amazing story. Now I've got a sports update. Big City Street. Once again, if you're not ready to call this show, get some reps. Hit our voicemail. We use that on our podcast. It's a good way to kind of get comfortable, get your confidence up, get some reps in. And I've got a podcast dropping tomorrow. Barry Zito, former MLBer, is my guest. So we will have that. Write this number down. Hit it up. 949-385-385. 0447, 949-385-0447. This email, hey, Rome, good thing Spencer has six wives to console him after that call. Lee in Vancouver, Spencer in Salt Lake has six wives to console him after that call. Dear James, please keep talking about Mike Gundy's beautiful flowing locks, and do not mention that thing stapled to the top of my head. Regards, and Adidas for life, Bill Self. Current basketball coach at Kansas for now. Taylor in Lexington. We don't know what Bill Self did or did not do. We don't know if Bill Self has something stapled to his head or not. We'll wait and see. What we do know is Kansas received a notice of allegations citing a lack of institutional control and that he was charged with head coach responsibility violations. Kansas has 90 days to respond, and he and the team say they will fight the allegations. That's all we know. Stop making assumptions. We'll see how it plays out. Going back to Gundy for a minute, in case you missed it, the reason we're talking about this is Gundy lit a reporter up who ran with some weird website story about how T. Boone Pickens left him a $30 gift card to get a haircut. And somebody from the AP tried to bring that to Gundy, and Gundy did not appreciate that at all.
Was there any truth to those reports that Boone Pickens kind of was joking around and left you a gift card for a haircut?
Don't hurt the real journalism world. It's jackasses like you that cause problems, okay? They shouldn't even let you call in. Do you want to talk football? We'll talk football. If you want to be out there and talk idiotic social media, then you need to go do something with a college kid.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Could not have gone any worse for him. Now, normally I'm the first one in the media to say, hey, man, you get off the media's back. The media is just doing its job. Yeah, I don't know what that guy's job is, but if he works for the AP, that was not his job. So Gundy let him have it. Not the first, not the last. Other people have been owned by coaches. I could play an entire montage of John Tortorella. But one of his best moments ever was back in 2010 when he got into it with Larry Brooks of the New York Post.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
You're not?
No.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'll speculate.
You speculate and be as sarcastic as you can be, as you usually are.
I will.
Go right ahead.
Good. Should one of you guys have taken a 3 minute?
I said I'm not taking your answering any of your questions. No. Have you ever fought before?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. Why? Are you challenging me now?
No, I'm not challenging you.
Okay.
You're probably beat up in the bus stop most of the time.
I think so, huh?
Next. Just go stand somewhere else, would you please?
No, I won't.
There's some kind of exchange right there back in 2010. Then you had 19-year-old Bryce Harper in 2012 when a Canadian reporter asked him if he was going to take advantage of the legal drinking age in Toronto and go out for a beer after the game.
A celebratory Canadian beer would seem to make sense after a hit like that. You got a favorite beer, and
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
That's a clown question, bro.
That's a clown question, bro.
In 2018, who will ever forget, before the Super Bowl against the Pats, Falcons superstar Julio Jones had absolutely no time for Adam Hawk when the Sparrow asked him about Tom Brady's recovery PJs.
Hey, Julio, do you think Tom Brady's recovery sleepwear actually works?
I don't know anything about sleepwear and what Tom Brady's doing when he sleeps.
What a dope, Hawk. If I had any idea you were going to show up and do that, Julio could have made that so much worse for you. The OG, though, may be Uncle Tommy chatting up Yogi Berra during Dodgers BP, only to turn around and see a camera crew rolling tape with a boom mic eavesdropping on his private chat with Yogi.
I don't want you to use that stuff that I'm talking to him about. You should let me know you're doing it.
They're never going to use it.
That's what they told me before about using that. Tape went all over the country on me. If I find out there's a tape about what I just said, I'm going to kick your ass and whoever's associated with it. Well, you got to tell people you got that microphone around.
Okay, I thought you saw me.
I'm talking a personal conversation with this man. Okay. I think that's rude.
That's amazing. I don't know how many of you have heard that. So Tommy Lasorda finds out that these guys are taping a private conversation with Yogi Berra. And they told him, hey, they're not going to use that. They're not going to use that. And his response was, yeah, really? That's what they said last time. And it went all over the nation. He goes, if I find out that you did, quote, I'll bleeping kick your bleep and everybody associated with you.
I don't want you to use that stuff that I'm talking to them about. You should let me know you're doing it.
They're never going to use it.
That's what they told me before about using that. Tape went all over the country on me. If I find out there's a tape about what I just said, I'm going to kick your ass and whoever's associated with it. Well, you got to tell people you got that microphone around.
Okay, I thought you saw it.
I'm talking a personal conversation with this man. Okay. I think that's rude.
I think that's bleeping rude. There's a part of that statement that's going underappreciated. I'll bleeping kick your ass and everyone ever associated with you. It's Tommy Lasorda back in the day.
Just said I'm going to kick your ass and whoever's associated with it. Well, you got to tell people you got that microphone around.
Okay, I thought you saw
it. I'm talking a personal conversation with this man.
He said, you have to tell people that you've got that microphone. And the guy goes, I thought you saw it. Apparently not. I told the story the other day. I saw him, Tommy, at David August's place not long ago. And Tommy, playfully, sort of, was F-bombing me. Tommy's like 90 now and still will go. Tommy will go now. Don't mess with Tommy. Huge call. Hey, listen, how many of you are using your wife or your girlfriend's shampoo? I'm telling you, your hair is different. So do them and your hair a favor. Get your own. Dove Men Plus Care has created a range designed to give your hair the care it needs to stay strong and more resilient. It's available at Walmart. My thanks to Brandon Tierney, Anthony Walker, Johnny Davis, the XR4TI, and you clones. See you tomorrow. We're out.